Hey y'all, it's time for another episode of Yo Loretta Late Night, hosted by me, your girl, Sarah Loretta, aka Lil Peach. I'm a hip-hop head, story explorer, and the owner of 99 in St. Clair, a creative studio that helps develop badass brands for badass people. Here on Late Night, though, no topic is off limits, and I'm even bringing in some of my friends to push that envelope and have an honest conversation about their journey to hopefully inspire yours. With so much magic and inspiration everywhere, it's my mission to help your creativity thrive by spending less time Googling and more time actually developing your brand. So are you ready? Grab your coffee, get comfy, and let's dive into today's episode. We are here with the amazing Sally Holder. She is an author, a business babe, a boss babe, and we have her on the podcast to talk about her new book. But before we get into it, Sally, let's start at the very, very beginning. Where are you from? What was your childhood like?
Okay. I love doing that. Thank you so much for having me, Sarah. I can't wait to dive into all of this and be able to share it with your listeners. So I grew up in Greenville, South Carolina.
Okay.
Relatively small town at the time, while it's grown immensely since then. When I was growing up, it was very small, somewhat sheltered, but I had a great childhood. I mean, my parents really encouraged us to travel and explore new things. We spent a month in Africa when I was 12.
Wow.
Really getting, out and realizing there's a bigger world out there besides Greenville, which was great. Definitely shaped my outlook. And so I have a twin sister. I think that is an important detail about my life for sure.
Yeah. I feel like twins have like this crazy just energy, and life is just so different for twins. True, I don't understand it, and I wish I did.
True. Especially identical. We're very identical. People still mistake us today.
Wow.
In fact, our voices are so similar that my parents can't tell us apart over the phone.
Oh, wow. So, that must be fun to play pranks on people.
It is. It is. And then I have two older siblings. I have an older brother and an older sister as well. So there were four of us, big family, big times. Pretty traditional family, though. My dad worked. My mom stayed at home. And, you know, it was the usual kind of dinner was on the table for him when he got home from work. And he worked hard and supported the family. So we had a pretty traditional upbringing, but like I said, they also had some non-traditional aspects where travel was a big part of it and exploration too.
Yeah. Yeah. So South Carolina, for those listening, y'all know how big of a hip hop head I am. And for those in South Carolina, you know, Charlamagne the God is from there and J. Cole has his Dreamville label. So what was it like culturally growing up in South Carolina for you?
Oh gosh. I think there wasn't that much culture, I think that's why the travel became so critical. It really was kind of sheltered as an overall kind of community. That definitely has changed tremendously because BMW's North American headquarters are there now. Michelin's North American headquarters are there. And so now it is a much more diverse community and offers so much more in the way of arts and all the things that I really love. And having a diverse community is something that I'm really passionate about because, I want my kids to grow knowing that there is a big world out there and that you can be anybody you want, no matter where you live and no matter where you've been born. You don't have to just live in New York or LA in order to make a big impact on this world. You can live anywhere you want these days. And so, back then it was just a little quiet and sleepy. Greenville started really as a textile town, and that is what took our family there from Charleston. My grandfather was from Charleston and he was in the textile industry, president of the of a big textile company. And so that was what Greenville, South Carolina was really known for a very long time. And, it was traditional in that the the men worked and the women stayed home. And mm-hmm. so, it wasn't, you know, there, I think we were just a little late in the, development of, you know, kind of this idea of women empowerment, but mm-hmm. it certainly is, like I said, caught on now that big business has taken hold there and, you know, it's been forced to really grow up and grow out a lot faster. So,
yeah. So thinking about that, really just kind of growing up in that traditional American dream kind of reality, right? What was your childhood like where maybe you thought about switching that up? What were you interested in as a kid? How did that creative entrepreneurial side come out of you?
So it's interesting. Everybody in my family was always an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. My dad and company, it was just always really what I pictured that I would do.
Okay.
Which is funny because that's not the path that I took. so as a kid, I thought, you know, I would be my own business owner. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how or what I would be doing, but I sort of pictured that. As a didn't control. Right when you're in a really traditional family, at least for us, I can't speak for everyone, but for us, it was that the parents called the shots and the kids just kind of did what you were required, right? I mean, right. You know, you knew how to be pleasing, if you will. There was a lot of like this old Southern statements of, you know, kids are to be seen and not heard. Mm-hmm. You know, the adults get their way and the kids just comply. And so that was a lot of how things kind of were for us growing up. It was, you know, we did everything on kind of an adult schedule. People kind of always laugh, but I mean, we ate dinner at 9 p.m.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
is so late.
I know.
That would be terrible.
We did everything kind of on an adult, you know, everything.
Right.
Like they wanted to come home, or my dad wanted to come home and be able to have, you know, a drink in the living room with his wife and enjoy time before mm-hmm. they came and sat down and had dinner. Mm-hmm. And so in order to accomplish all of that and then have dinner on the table, that would be 8:30 or 9.
Wow.
Now, granted, as you get older, that kind of works in line with sports and things like that. But as a young kid, it was like, oh my God.
And just dragging. I'm dying of hunger.
Yeah. There's a lot of formality too. Like, you know, the... you know, we always had family Christmas together and we were required to have a sit down breakfast for Christmas morning.
Wow.
All about 30 of us. So my dad had 4 siblings. So it was all of them, all of their wives, all of their children, every single person sit down breakfast with china and sterling silver utensils and the whole deal. And then only when the adults were finished eating, did you kids get to go and open Christmas presents.
Oh my.
So it's a very like deep structured
very
environment.
Formatted. Yeah.
Very formatted, very rule oriented, mm-hmm. you know, just a lot of here are the rules and you abide by them. You don't really question them. And you don't really get to make a lot of choices. You just do what you're told.
Right. Right. So what was your breaking point then?
you know, I think that I had a couple, you know, I was,
cause you're definitely not like that now.
I am not like that now. I'm far away from that. And I think I was then too. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you just learn how to suppress it. You learn how to get along.
Yep.
So I was, I was riding horses and dancing ballet. And I think that this was my first real experience with kind of what culture says today, which is when you're good at something, you stick with it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was good at dancing ballet. And my sister and I did a summer at the Joffrey in New York and had all kinds of amazing opportunities to dance all over. But I hated it. And, you know, we were sort of known for it, you know, in our small town. And yet I didn't like it. And so it was my first experience where I didn't enjoy something and yet I was still made to do it because that's what you do.
Okay.
And you just stick with it because that's what's going to make you look good on the outside. It's going to check boxes on your way to college. And that, so I stayed with dancing until I was, I think at my senior year. And that was the first time that I hit my breaking point where I said, I cannot do it anymore. I physically cannot make myself go in there. I hate it so much.
Okay.
And finally I stood up to my parents and said that, and they agreed to let me, only dance like 3 days a week instead of like seven.
Oh my God.
And so that was the compromise that wow. I did that and didn't perform anymore, but I still had to take the classes and
right.
that sort of thing. So, you know,
did they make you fill your time with other things then?
Well, I was still riding horses. So
okay,
there really
so you
wasn't
just did
a
that
of,
more.
I did.
Gotcha.
And there never was a lot of time anyway. And then I picked up some other things, like I did dance team at school and some things that I never got to explore.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely was always busy, but it was just about sticking with something. It was that idea that if you're good at it, why would you ever quit?
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think that that was so ingrained in me. You just don't ever quit anything.
Mm-hmm.
And especially not if you're good at it.
Right.
So,
yeah,
I
grew up kind of similarly to that too, but I think that made me more defiant when people were like, you can't not draw. You're such a good drawer. Or I taught for a little while and I quit because I was good at it. And everyone was like, "This, you have to make this your career." And it's like, no, I want to make that decision for myself. And it made me more defiant and made me actually quit things because yeah. too many people were pushing me to keep doing it. Which I think is a backward logic, but sometimes I feel like it gives you more exposure, you know, to just like explore different things, no matter what level of skill set you're at.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it comes back to a concept that I now talk about so much with my clients and in my business coaching is that we just don't need to swing the pendulum from 0 to 10 ever.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I took it one direction, which was stick with it 100%, no matter if I hate it. You took the other, which was, I'm going to go to 0. Mm-hmm. And I think we all need to live much more at 4, 5, and 6, that middle ground mm-hmm. where you're saying, okay, I don't want to do it their way, which has to be, you know, with, I don't know, obligations put on me that aren't making me feel good.
Right.
And I don't want to not do it at all. So there's got to be some middle ground in there where I can do it my way,
mm-hmm.
where I can figure out what fulfills me and I can utilize this gift I've been given. And it fulfills me. And so I think that's the ultimate thing that we're all really looking for is to take that talent that we know we have and but use it in a way that we enjoy and not the way that everyone else says that we have to.
Absolutely. And I think there's a difference between fully going against the grain because you really want to forge your own path, but also
right.
not making it so difficult for yourself that you're miserable.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
something I tell my clients too, is like, you have to be original. You have to do what makes you happy, but there are certain things that are just easier if you follow the grain
yeah.
and not be so extreme one way or the other. And so I absolutely love that theory that you not only talk in your book, but you do preach a lot. And if y'all aren't following
yeah.
Sally on Instagram, you should, because she's got some really great knowledge that she drops all the time.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So before we talk about hitting rock middle and how
yeah.
that came about, you became a lawyer first and
mm-hmm.
foremost. So you had your breaking point as a ballerina in high school, and then you
yeah.
went to law school. You went through college, went to law school. Why did you choose law? What was your career path like starting out?
You know, I think about that opportunity of like stopping dancing is my first little test run at breaking out of this mold, you know, like the box that I had felt like I had been put in. And, but it didn't go perfectly, right? It didn't go exactly the way I wanted. And I never got still that feeling of relief.
Mm-hmm.
I think had I been, you know, bold enough to quit entirely, I would have found that relief. But because I didn't, I just thought, okay, well then there's no breaking out in the box. It doesn't even matter why I push against the grain, just follow it
mm-hmm.
because it didn't help anyway. And right. so I went on to Vanderbilt for undergrad, you know, was like, okay, what do I need to do in order to be successful? Because that I was certain I wanted, right? I wanted to like be this successful woman because like I said, you know, I grew up in this environment where it was always the men and yet My mom was a strong woman. She was the first female manager of a bank ever in the state of South Carolina.
Wow.
And so she was a strong woman and encouraged us to be strong too. Mm-hmm. And so so I knew I wanted to be like the strong woman, but to me, in order to be that, I could only be a couple of things in order to achieve that like external success. Right. One of which was a doctor or a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like the sight of blood. So I just decided, okay, I'll be a lawyer. Like right. That literally was about as much detail and thought process as I put into it.
Okay.
And I just said, okay, I will never forget being there at Vanderbilt. And so many of my friends were like, I think I'm going to go to law school. And I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I went and took the LSAT, and I just am one of those people that, you know, when I put my mind to something, I'm going to make it happen. And I don't spend a ton of time looking back to say especially then, I do much more so now. Mm-hmm. But then I wasn't thinking about whether this is the right choice for me. Mm-hmm. I was just thinking through how this looked externally and whether or not this would make me achieve some measure of external success. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at the time, the question I was just asking was, does this look good to everybody else? Right.
Right.
Or everybody else think about that. And that's not necessarily how it goes through our brain, but that's mm-hmm. essentially what we're asking ourselves. Like it more so goes through our brain, like, ooh, yeah, be a lawyer. That sounds good. That sounds like mm-hmm. it would be cool. And really I'm thinking, that sounds like other people would think it's cool.
Well, and I feel like too, as children, no matter, I think really even now, you know, your age and how you grew up is that we don't do enough self-development as kids. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, like my therapist right now puts so much emphasis on my Myers-Briggs personality. And it's such a deep afterthought to me because I wasn't raised to really think about what will this do for me? What will this impact be? Just what does the status quo consider success? Yes. But I think now in our age bracket as adults, and we're past kind of that 25, you know, year mark, it's like, okay, success is so much different than what anyone has ever showed us, anyone has ever seen. And at the end of the day, like, all it is about you. And so if you consider yourself successful, whether that's making 100K a year or making a million, you have to be happy with those decisions, you know? But I also think, you know, peer pressure, and you want to go with where your friends are at and be able to run in that same crowd where you're comfortable. And so again, it's finding that middle of that pendulum of where you stand for comfortability, likability, and successability. If that's a word.
I don't know if it is, but I like it.
Yeah.
That's so good. I completely agree. I mean, it's such a beautiful way of putting the whole sentiment of kind of trying to find, you know, the middle of the road.
Absolutely.
Where you are you, but are challenging yourself, continuing to challenge yourself. Mm-hmm. And doing it in a way that suits you instead of just trying to do it in a way that suits everyone else. Right. You know, I was on a coaching call earlier today and I was saying to them, you know, if you're altering your business so much, right, to maintain relationships with people who are trying to end them, mm-hmm. right, and you're trying to change your business in such a way to mold to what they want, mm-hmm. you suddenly will find yourself becoming an amoeba, right? Mm-hmm. Like instead of this really strong structure with a really strong foundation, you will find yourself like moving around and reshaping yourself constantly mm-hmm. to suit someone else's needs. And eventually what you'll find is you find yourself out of business.
Absolutely.
Because
yeah,
you will have tried to alter yourself so much that you will become unrecognizable.
Exactly. Or people just won't be able to connect with you. Because
absolutely.
In my first year of business, I went through exactly what you're talking about because I was listening to everyone else around me because, you know, mm-hmm. when you're first starting out, you really have no idea what you're doing. And for those exactly. of you who think that you do, you have no idea. Business ownership is so different. But, you know, you have to stay true to yourself and you have to take the time, I think, to really, truly listen to your gut, you know, mm-hmm. of does this feel right? Am I being myself? Because if you're not, you become kind of this robot, you know, of like what you just said, an amoeba of everything around you that's not even you. And
yeah.
I had a business coach a few months ago tell me, you know, you're never going to be the next Jenna Kutcher. You're never going to be the next Amy Porterfield or Tony Robbins.
I hope
like,
not.
Exactly. You are yeah. you, and you have to embrace that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, then we're just duplicating what's already been done.
Exactly.
And no one needs that, mm-hmm. frankly.
Yep.
What they
and there's
need.
No challenge either. You're not challenging the spectrum at all.
Yeah. They need you to be you. They need you to show up as your authentic self. And then they will be far more attracted to you than you, than they ever would be mm-hmm. if you're trying to mold yourself into it exactly like someone else does.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So how were you nominated and how did you win the Young Professionals Award? I want to get into the juice now.
Yeah. Okay, good. So I went straight from law school to the second largest labor and employment law firm in the country.
Okay.
So we ended up having over 700 attorneys when I left. We grew from about 135 to 700 and something when I left.
Wow.
That is a lot. It was a
lot.
I was there in the flagship office for almost 10 years and, you know, I had some amazing opportunities to work with huge companies, but it wasn't fulfilling in the sense that I wasn't sleeping better at night knowing that I'd save FedEx $1 million. I mean,
right.
God love FedEx, but that
it's
wasn't
not that
like,
important.
It's not. Yeah. You know, no one was patting me on the back and all of that. So I was looking more for external success and thinking, well, if no one internally is going to pat me on the back, then I'm going to go and seek it out elsewhere. What else can I do to stand out? And so there were all of these awards, you know, Young Professional of the Year from our Chamber of Commerce was one of them, age 40 and under, and then Best and Brightest, 35 and under. I mean, if there was an award to be won, I was going to win it because simply I thought that if I just won them all, then I had proven something and that I would suddenly get like anointed with some like crown or bestowed with some, you know, knighthood that said you're successful. Right. And I'll never forget the night that I went up there and received the award for Young Professional of the Year. And I thought when I stepped off that stage, everything was going to be different from there. Mm-hmm. And nothing was. Nothing was different. Everyone was already moving on, asking questions about what they were going to do next and what plans were coming up. And I was devastated to learn that, you know, yes, they were happy for me, but like no one cared. I mean, right. Nothing was different. I hadn't been, you know, bestowed with anything. It was just one more check mark. Mm-hmm. And that was the night that I really felt like something changed. I was 27 years old. Okay. I had done everything I could do. I had checked every box. And I was devastated to find out that there was no pot of gold at the end of this rainbow.
Right.
And pot of gold being not money, but contentment, joy, happiness, all the things I really wanted that I thought I was going to get when, right? That horrible word, like when we become successful, we'll get to feel these things. When we, you know, do everything we're supposed to do, we'll get to feel these things. And what I've learned, the big like misnomer is, or misunderstanding is that you get to feel those things today, right away.
Absolutely.
You don't have to wait for them.
Right.
And it's all up to you. But the trick.
As an entrepreneur, it can get a little overwhelming trying to figure out what equipment and tools are best for your business, especially when you're first starting out. My office space, or apartment cubicle as I like to call it, has become fully equipped with everything I need to launch and grow 99 in St. Clair. And now you can grab all of those things for yourself. From podcast microphones to the coffee I brew that helps me stay focused, we even have Squarespace templates and branding kits to get your business up and running by the end of the week. You'll also find amazing discounts to try out platforms like Canva and Flowdesk in there. Inside the 99 in St. Clair store, we've got everything you need to help your business become a showstopper. So quit wasting time digging through Amazon and Pinterest to figure out what you need. Instead, head on over to www.99stclair.com/shop to start building your creative space today.
Is to flip the script and be searching internally for that joy and contentment and define it for yourself instead of searching externally like I was doing. Mm-hmm. So I collapsed that night, cried myself to sleep, and, you know, kept the secret to myself, just like a lot of women do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we keep it to ourselves. We feel a lot of guilt and shame around the fact that we've achieved success, and yet we are not feeling fulfillment. Mm-hmm. We feel like there's something wrong with us, mm-hmm. and that we as women all too often, you know, don't want to express that guilt and shame to our friends. Mm-hmm. You know, when they say things like, you must be so happy. And we want to say to them like, oh my God, I'm not
help. At all. Yeah.
And we don't say it because, you know, we just feel like it would be easier to comply and say, sure, yeah, everything's great, mm-hmm. and move on. Meanwhile, we have this secret that, you know, we've hit rock middle. And that's in large part why I wanted to coin this phrase, is that I feel like if we have a term to be able to use, you know, a phrase that sums up this place of empty success and that lacks fulfillment, then we can talk about it a lot more. We can get it out in the open and not feel alone.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm curious, because our stories are pretty similar starting in adulthood. I did not grow up at all similarly to you did, but I had a defining moment where I said that I have to achieve every single thing. And that basically was, and some of you guys listening have heard this story before, so I'm sorry, but I basically was in therapy at 18 and had a therapist say, wow, I'm surprised you're not pregnant or on drugs for everything you've been through.
And that's similar to me. I had a therapist say to me, you're willingness to endure pain is unmatched by any other client I've ever had.
Oh my.
And I leaned forward to her and said, thank you.
I was not thankful to my therapist for saying that, but I took it so hard and so deep. And for the past 10 years, almost, I have done nothing but work to prove her wrong, that I would not be that person. And similarly to you, mm-hmm. I kept working towards things because of that one moment where it's like, I can't fail. And like in college and in my career, I've mm-hmm. always worked above average, like so scarily that it would make me sick and stress me out, because I felt if I would at all be on that average level, that people were going to think that I was failing. And it was mm-hmm. this weird misconception of, again, what success looks like. And then you just, one day you end up crying on the floor because you're so burnt out, you're so tired, and you physically can't take it anymore.
Yes.
And I really wish we would talk more about this, just as humans in general, because one comment, one award, one moment can define such a bittersweet adventure that we land ourselves on, you know, and then before you know it,
one moment means so much.
Exactly. And then it's like you try to explain to people how monumental that moment is. And, you know, I tell people about that experience a lot, and people are like, well, why did you take it so seriously? And it's like, well, I was 18. I didn't know any better. You know?
Right.
And then,
it's just, you know, you were open to that at that moment for whatever reason.
Exactly.
You know, your heart was open to hearing that in that way. But mm-hmm. I would venture to say that now you have used it to your benefit rather than your detriment.
Yep. As have you.
Yes, exactly.
So you hit rock middle, and you were crying on the floor. At mm-hmm. what point did you wake up and say, people needed to hear my story, I'm going to write a book?
Oh gosh, not until, let's see, that was about 12 years later, 11 years later.
Okay.
So I stayed practicing law for 8 more years.
Wow.
And decided that I was going to keep that little secret to myself, that I was going to, I thought, stay at rock middle and just ride it out until one day things would just magically get better. because mm-hmm. as if things get better just by accident.
Mm-hmm. They don't. For those who are wondering,
they don't. They get better by intention. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, well, if I just sort of stay here, just again, one day I'll be happy. Mm-hmm. One day.
Absolutely.
And I'll just get there and it'll just suck less. And it didn't.
In that thought, were you doing self-reflection during that time? Did you really know how to do self-reflection? Because I felt the same way. I was like, it's just going to get better whenever it gets better. I'll just watch Netflix until it does.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So we just decide then to use numbing mechanisms to help ourselves through it, right? And everyone has different ones. And some of them are, you know, very minor, but some are not. And mine was not. I decided to use alcohol to get through it. For me, it was, you know, just sort of a gradual process of believing that if you, you know, worked hard, you got to play hard. If you sacrificed your happiness during the work week, that you got to enjoy whatever you wanted on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And so I found myself in a place where I had slid from rock middle closer to rock bottom. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's what I have experienced, is that you're headed in one direction or another, either closer to your dreams or further away from them. You're never staying still like we believe we are.
Yep.
And so I was moving further away from them because I wasn't doing anything about it. And I was just sitting there in it, mm-hmm. sitting in the misery and embracing it, if you will. And so at 35, I believe, 35, was when I had my own kind of rock bottom moment where I decided enough is enough. You know, I was not happy about the person I had become. I just really didn't recognize myself. And, you know, I think that we all have to get in a certain amount of pain to create change in our lives. And it's unfortunate. And so that's one thing I really hope this book does, is gives people the permission to change earlier mm-hmm. and create the change that they want to have at rock middle, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that using this new terminology around it will give people that permission to change earlier, because they'll know that this is an actual place where they can make a choice.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, I was 35 when I decided to get sober and said, enough is enough. And then, you know, decided the potential pain of change was not as scary as staying where I was. Mm-hmm. And so I did. And, you know, that's when I really started so much more. I mean, I had been working on personal growth for a long time before that, but never really gotten anywhere. Mm-hmm. Because in my mind, this was standing in the way. Of it. So, you know, I think that we all are given these gifts, these trials and tribulations we go through to say, like, how bad do you want it? How bad do you want to become the person that you were meant to be? And are you willing to do the hard work? Are you willing to let go of some of the things that you thought you needed, right? Whether it's Netflix, Instagram, drinking, whatever, are you willing to let go of those things so that you can grow, mm-hmm. so that you can rise up to be the person you're meant to be? And,
absolutely.
So I eventually did, and not without a tremendous amount of pain. Mm-hmm. And then spent, you know, the next 4 years, now five, really working on myself and my business and helping others. You know, I had previously run lots of different companies and was always a high achiever. But now I was really passionate about saying to other women, gosh, there is such a better way to grow your business and have success mm-hmm. than just hustling.
Yes.
Kind of working harder does not mean you're earning more money. And we all know that.
Yes.
So if it doesn't mean that, then there's got to be a better way.
Exactly.
So that's what I'm really passionate about sharing with more women today.
Yeah. So I completely agree with all of that, because one, hustle mentality, while I do love some of Gary Vee, I think that there is an element of when you're figuring out who you are, knowing your limits and knowing what your values are. You know, for me, now that I work from home, I have my own space, I really value being able to make dinner every single night and cooking and baking and like making time for that. And so it's like, okay, I have my time limit, you know, and being able to recognize those things in yourself, whether that's you want to spend more time with your dog or you want to go to the gym, you can hustle without working 23 out of the 24 hours a day. And there's so many amazing products out there to help you work smarter and not harder. And that's a whole nother conversation. But there is a theme in your book that I want us to make sure that we cover. And for those of you who are listening, if you haven't checked out Sally's book, again, really quickly, it's called Hitting Rock Middle. You can buy it on her website. We will link it all in the description below because there's some really great stuff in there. But
Of course, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. And Amazon, all the links are there. We'll put all of those in the description. So one theme in your book that I would love for you to explain to everyone is that you think the phrase, she believed she could, so she did, actually causes women to fail. So let's talk about that. How did that come about? Why do you believe that?
So, you know, I think that I started looking around and seeing the messages that women were being inundated with, right? And so many of them are around doing more, but just not doing the right, like more of the right things. It's just about this really overall idea of women just having to do more all the time. Right. There is never a stopping point.
It's kind of the difference between like being busy and being productive.
Exactly. So women are really inundated with so many of those messages. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of them is around that idea of hustle, you know, get that girl boss hustle. There are no messages like that for men.
Nope.
Go look for them. They don't exist. And so I was looking around at some of the other ones and I saw that and I just thought really long and hard about it. Like, she believed she could, so she did. Well, how about instead, shouldn't it be she believed she could, so she didn't?
Or she just wanted to?
And I think that we too often are falling into the trap of doing so many things simply because we can and simply because we're capable of it. And that's not always the right thing for you to do for yourself or for your business. You don't need to say yes because we're capable. And I find way too many business owners, female business owners, fall into the trap of saying yes to things just because they can. And that was, you know, I was seeing that message and then seeing it being carried out so much in real life with women just falling into this same mentality of checking external boxes and doing certain projects or saying yes to certain things because it would look good. And it didn't actually drive their revenue in any way at all. And so I'm a big proponent, as I said, of helping women earn more and not just do more. So when I saw them, you know, that really correlating in real life to just because she can, she was doing it, I thought, well, we've got to stop this. We've got to stop just perpetuating this idea of just because the door is open, you have to walk through it. No, stop, wait, look, and make sure that that's the right door for you to go through for yourself and for your business. Does it drive your revenue? Does it create the type of lifestyle that you want for your business, right? Does it take you in the direction that you're going for your particular company? Ask those questions before you say yes to it. And because the most valuable and precious resource you have is your time. And when you spend that, you're not going to get it back. So it doesn't matter if you can and you want to prove something to someone, just make sure that you know that you're saying yes to that. You're saying no to something else. And that no to something else could be a true revenue driver. It could be something that is really going to expand your business. So I just try to make sure that I'm always educating my clients and anybody I talk to say, that's fine if you say yes, but I want you to know that that could be a detour for you and it could be a time suck. And if you go in it with eyes wide open to know all of those things and still want to do it, all by all means do it, but call it for what it is and know that, and don't do it just because you wanted to prove you could.
Right. And I think that's so interesting because I have a fair handful of people who will come to me and say, I think I want to start a business just because everyone else is doing it. Entrepreneurship sounds fun and popular. And it's, so I spend a lot of time with my clients that I do decide to take on that I choose to say yes to, because I say no to a lot of stuff. But the biggest thing is like, is not necessarily your why, because I think that your why is a response to who you are and is an action that you put towards your story. Y'all have heard this spiel from me a lot. But you know, I think it's like really figuring out what you can give to the world and how you can use your power to benefit other people. And so if you're considering just starting a business to start a business, well, you have to figure out what that purpose is and how you can give back. And that becomes your why and your action. But I think that it's also interesting, just like thinking about, oh my God, I completely lost my train of thought. So sorry. we were talking about people just wanting to start. Okay. So I think it's really interesting too, in this kind of topic, are people who want to always consider monetizing something. I think that there's an interesting hustle culture towards what it looks like to just say yes to having a hobby versus saying yes to monetizing something. And I think that there is this weird kind of conversation and being that if you don't have a side hustle, you don't matter. And I don't really understand how that came about. I don't understand why that is the narrative right now. But just because you have a talent doesn't mean you have to do everything with it. And I think that completely goes full circle to what we were talking about in your early childhood, is you just did it because you were good. You were kind of told to do it, and no one put that block in front of you to tell you no.
Right. It's so true. I mean, I love that this is part of your dialogue, that we don't have to monetize everything. And you know, I think that in today's culture, it can be very pressure oriented to try to do that. But I mean, there is a huge difference, between having what you love be a hobby and having what you love be a business. And, you know, you can tend to lose some of the joy around it, because you have to think about what a business requires. I was just talking to another business owner about the fact that she loves, you know, the aspect of making cookies and having something creative and helping kids learn how to cook. What she doesn't love are all the business attributes to it.
Like most of us don't. And the,
Right. And the business loans and all of that. But see, she's willing to do it because of what her ultimate why and her ultimate goal is to grow it large enough to franchise it and things like that. But when it is just a hobby and you have no grander goals to it, and you don't have a bigger plan and vision to turn it into something where you're like, I have a bigger impact that I really want to make here. You're just trying to monetize it. You're going to get all the other crap that goes along with running a business. And that can take all of the joy and fun out of your hobby. So I hate it when people try to do that, because they lose the joy that their hobby originally brought. And they never really had a great intention of turning it into something else that, you know, would warrant all that comes along with the business aspects of it, if all that makes sense.
No, it does. And I definitely think that there's an element that I think more business coaches should share, and I feel like you already do this, is that just create. If someone, if you're just creating, don't even think about the money towards it. Just like, create until someone says they want to pay you for that, and then decide if you want to say yes or no to that opportunity. You know,
I would rather have you really be clear about your ultimate destination in your life, right? And that's something that I push people to do, is think about what type of life they're wanting to have. Like, if you're thinking through that you love the steady paycheck, you love, you know, retiring from a company at, and you can imagine yourself where you are until you're 65 and love the steadiness of it and all of that, then you don't need to change that just because everybody else is jumping on the entrepreneur bandwagon.
Exactly.
Right? culturally, we shift back and forth between this, you know, the idealism entrepreneurship and then away from it and back mm-hmm. into the idealism of entrepreneurship and away from it. So right. we're just on a ride towards it right now. Keep riding the wave.
Exactly. This roller coaster, it never ends.
No.
But
no.
I think going kind of in this idea, right, of do you matter if you have a side hustle? Do you matter if you monetize? And I have a question for you. So when you were leaving law and considering starting your own business, what did people around you say? What was that conversation experience like? Were you supported? Were people kind of like, what the hell are you doing? Why are you leaving the salary behind?
Yes. No, they were not supportive.
Okay.
And I still have, like, I jokingly say this, but I still have the one guy, and it's not one guy, it's people all the time coming up to me in my local Starbucks being like, oh my gosh, I'm so sad you're not practicing law anymore. Like, oh no, that's terrible. I heard that the other day. And I'm like, first of all, I'm
why is that terrible?
Second of all, why is that terrible? Who is that terrible for?
Oh my
is it
gosh.
Terrible for you? It must be you, because it's not terrible for me, because right. I'm way more fulfilled and being more financially rewarded, which I find comes with a greater sense of fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
But no, and I think that, you know, all too often we don't have enough conversation around that, mm-hmm. that, you know, you have to be willing to traverse this discomfort zone to go from where you are in your comfort zone to where the magic happens, right? Mm-hmm. Like that place where allegedly when you step outside your comfort zone, that's where the magic happens, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not immediate.
It
doesn't
not.
Happen even remotely immediately. It takes a while, and it takes you to be able to go through that discomfort. And one of the parts of discomfort is being willing to stand up for yourself and what you believe in. And if what you believe in is something different than what you previously created, that's okay. But know that other people are going to push back against that, not because of you, not mm-hmm. because they doubt you, but because of the way it makes them feel, mm-hmm. because of the way it challenges them. And
absolutely.
The way that it upsets their apple cart. And so it makes them turn inward and ask themselves some deeper questions that they're not ready to answer. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I do say, who is it bad for that I'm not practicing law anymore? It must be you.
Mm-hmm.
Because for you, it challenges the way that you're looking at things. Like, why would she leave? Why would she leave something successful?
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, high six figures to do something different. Why would anyone do that? And it then question things like that. I already know the answers to all those questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, but people don't necessarily like to be challenged in that way, because then they've got to take a look at themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So anticipate that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, that's why we seek growth, is that we know that there's something bigger out there for us,
mm-hmm.
and that we know that there's something else we have left to give. And that ultimately, sometimes that means coming with a whole different group of people that you're going to be surrounded by.
Absolutely.
And that's good news too.
Yep. I think taking first steps and allowing whatever comes with that, just to let it come, because I know, so I started my business a year ago and I am in a completely different space than I was 2 years ago. Different people, different mindsets. And it's, I think that is such a make or break in any aspect of our lives. You know, if you're so passionate about baking cookies, but no one around you likes cookies or baking or chocolate, which I don't know why people wouldn't, but if you don't, like, it really can I love chocolate. Oh my gosh.
Me too.
And I feel like, you know, it just kind of puts a damper on your interests if you don't have anyone around you that you can ask questions or brainstorm or say, hey, try this new recipe that I am cooking up, or maybe I'm trying a new design style. And life is meant to be exploratory. And I think that people who are kind of questioning, like, well, why are you doing that? Because when I left the nonprofit world, I was in nonprofit for 10 years, and I still get people still that are like, why'd you leave? Like, you were so good at communications. It's like, well, I'm still doing that. I'm just doing it for myself. And I think when people right. kind of approach you that way, it's more about they're not even looking at what you're doing now. They were only looking at what you did. And they're mm-hmm. kind of in this, you know, like multi-level phase of they're in that denial or kind of avoidance phase of who they are and what you are at, because they're only looking at you from how they saw you, not how you want to be seen. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is really hard to convey yeah. sometimes, especially when you're still figuring out who you are.
Totally. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And they may be blind to the fact that they might be in rock middle too. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of coming awake to that idea. But that's why I have empathy for those people now, is to mm-hmm. say, you know, they just don't know better, so they can't do better yet. Mm-hmm. But eventually they will or they won't, right? It doesn't have anything to do with me. It doesn't deter me from my journey at all. I have respect for them and where they choose to be. Mm-hmm. And if they want to, you know, metaphorically come to my side of the street and grow and continue to challenge themselves, great. Mm-hmm. I would love to be a part of their lives again, or, you know, mm-hmm. hang out with them. But if that's not what they choose to do, that's okay too. There are a lot of other people that want to be exactly where they want to be. Absolutely. I'm just not one of them. So yeah. I'm not willing to shrink myself to fit back in.
Oh, I love that phrase. Let's replay that. Don't shrink yourself to fit in other people's boxes. I love yes. that. I love that so much. And it's so true.
I don't want to do that anymore. Mm-hmm. It never makes me feel good. And so if there are those people that you go to coffee with or dinner with, or even the movies or whatever with, mm-hmm. and they make you feel that way, that you have to shrink down, then ask yourself why you're still doing that, mm-hmm. why you're still spending time with those people. Mm-hmm. And likely it is out of old habit.
Yes.
And fear of moving on.
And habits are very hard to break. Habits are very hard to break. But if you have someone who wants to jump on your side of the street and explore mm-hmm. a little bit, what advice would you give to someone who, like us, didn't really grow up to explore ourselves, but want to, or maybe just really frankly don't know how? What advice would you give to people?
You know, I mean, my biggest piece of advice is just begin to surround yourself with things that challenge you, right? Start small. Don't need to, you know, I hate it when I hear, but now you can tell I really like to challenge all of these old concepts and ideas. You don't mm-hmm. need to leap into anything. Don't leap into entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You don't need to choose between either or. Just start small and start somewhere. And most of the time, to me, it starts with challenging the way that you think about things. So the best way I know how to do that is to read. Start by reading. You know, the top CEOs in the world read an average of 60 books a year. Mm-hmm. The average individual reads one. Mm-hmm. So we wonder why, you know, we're having this huge gap in growth, in knowledge. And in large part, that's due to our own habits. Ask yourself how often you're challenging, you know, what you know about anything that you find interesting, history, culture, society, anything. Read a nonfiction book, period. Mm-hmm. Learn.
Yes.
Commit to yourself to learn something this year. Mm-hmm. And so I would definitely say start there. There are some fascinating ones that I think, you know, people would really enjoy that aren't recommended all that often. One is called Positive Intelligence by Shirzad Shamim.
Okay.
He was, I think, a Yale Business School professor, but that book was huge for me. Mm-hmm. Helped really redefine a lot of my mindset. And then I love anything by Sean Achor.
Okay.
A C H O R. He is a happiness researcher, and he is, you know, it's just fascinating the way that he talks about, you know, our own cultivation of happiness. Mm-hmm. He has some great books. One is called The Happiness Advantage, and another is called Big Potential. Mm-hmm. I think both of those are great. But I mean, doing what you're doing and listening to this podcast is a great way to continue to you know, hear stories of people that are challenging themselves. You know, scientifically or biologically, you're actually building your muscles there to help break out of habits that you've had ingrained within yourself and your brain for a long time. When you feed it with new information, you are opening new doors and creating new neurotransmitters that way. So I would just say start there, start small, and you will begin to feel with more of a connection to your own internal voice instead of always looking, you know, externally to other people's opinions.
Absolutely. And that is why I love doing this podcast, because there are so many people in this world. You know, you and I don't know each other before we started recording this, but I feel so much more connected to you because we're right. able to sit and compare war stories, if you will, you know, yeah, and really just hear other perspectives. And I feel like we're in an environment right now that isn't super supportive of that, of hearing different perspectives, but all you have to do is take that first step. And all of those books we will also put in the description below, because y'all know I'm a big reader and I will link all of those. But if you can't commit to a novel, if your brain maybe doesn't work that way, you know, there's great apps like Medium who you can literally just put in your interest and it will give you articles based on things. If you're interested in artificial intelligence or I don't know, the fashion industry, you can just really read one thing. And if you're interested, allow yourself to just dive in, learn every single thing that you can, because that's what's going to allow you to explore and learn more about textiles or about, you know, print patterns. Or, you know, I just finished reading Isaac Mizrahi's memoir, and amazing book. And it was all about him growing up as a Syrian second generation immigrant and growing up as a gay Jewish man, which I had no idea. One, I had no idea he was Syrian. Two, had no idea he was Jewish. And so just hearing his perspective of his own war story, you know, metaphorically speaking, just, I think it just allows you to be more empathetic. It allows you to see the world no longer so much black and white. You know, and I think, Sally, that's what you've done so well, is taking really how you grew up and really changing that narrative. And I love kind of bringing this completely full circle of how you said at the beginning that you didn't really grow up in a very diverse environment, but that's what you're striving to do now. You want to learn, you want to educate, because that's how we keep the world moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I heard, to quote Sean Anker, he had said that, you know, true happiness has scientifically been proven to be when you are moving closer to your greatest potential and when you believe that you're doing that. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, that just signifies when we're growing and challenging ourselves and, you know, incorporating different people's ideas and thoughts and getting to know how different people live and, you know, what they think. And to me, I find that absolutely fascinating. And we have so much to learn from each other. No one knows it all. No one has it all figured out. No one is living perfectly. I'm not, you're not, no one is. And we're all, though, you know, but you can live a lot happier when you realize that and you're willing to lean into that concept and say, you know, we're all just trying to figure it out and grow along the way and enjoy the journey.
Absolutely.
And a lot of that is about being open to new ideas. I find those who are closed off to those new ideas are those that tend to be the unhappiest.
Absolutely. I completely agree with that. And for really to start your own opportunity, I think we should put in our final thoughts for this podcast episode so people can start exploring and finding what makes them tick. So what final thoughts, what would you like to push? Where can everybody find you online, find your book, etc.?
Yeah. So, the easiest way is to go to sallyholder.com, which is SalliHolder. So go to sallyholder.com. I've got tons of different offerings there, you know, tons of free. I have my own podcast, which is Hitting Rock Middle. And then, of course, you can buy my book. And then I've got even a workbook and now a new online course coming out that will be great companions. But My favorite thing I'm doing this year is in 2020 working with a group of women in a coaching collaborative called The Brim, which is the Beyond Rock Middle Movement. And
love
that
it.
Is up to 250 women, and it gives you a chance to have coaching with me throughout the entire year, and access to a member portal where you can connect with and get to know all the other female entrepreneurs, and we can be able to leverage each other's talents and do business with one another, and also make us feel like we're a little less alone, right? Mm-hmm. So that we can know that there are other women going through exactly what we are. And so I have found that this type of environment where women are being pulled together to do coaching and growth together makes their businesses grow 2.5 times faster statistically, but it's just more fun. Mm-hmm. So
it is. It absolutely is. I think when you have a tribe, yeah. Magical things happen. They really do.
Magical. So true. So I am pumped about The Brim and, you know, just to see where these women can go. So we still have some spots left. I would love for you to check it out on my website. And if you want to hear more about it, you can always reach out to me on Instagram. And it's the same. Sally Holder.
Awesome.
Is my Instagram handle.
Awesome. And we will make sure to link all of that. All right, Sally, thank you so much for being on the podcast. And for all of you guys listening, if you love this podcast, make sure to tell your friends, tell your friends, tell your friends. I say that every episode, but you'll know that is how we keep this going, by sharing, rating, review, subscribing, listening to us. We are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. We are over there in the green bubble of the internet. And I hope y'all have an amazing week. Keep killing it like always, and we'll see you next Tuesday. Bye, guys. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode, guys. If you want more information about our show or to get involved, head to 99stclair.com/YoLoretta for more information.